Welcome to today's edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. In addition to feature reports, I'll bring you a look at regional and national agricultural news. And the show starts with a look at California agricultural news. Robert Collier, a representative of Circle U.S. Energy Corporation, says that as soon as 2027, they will install 4 floating wind turbine generators in the Pacific Ocean near Vandenberg Space Force Base. He says they're excited that as California's first floating offshore wind farm, they will be setting the standard for California offshore wind energy. Circo has partnered with SPM Offshore to create Floventis Energy for the local project, which has been dubbed CAD Demo, according to Collier. In 2021, the California State Lands Commission accepted the application and agreed to conduct a full-blown environmental impact report on the proposal for the ocean of the southern coast of Vandenberg near Lompoc. The State Lands Commission expects to kick off the environmental impact study this year with release of a notice of preparation, but does not have a time period for when it will happen, according to Collier. That will start procedures to begin collecting comments about what issues should be analyzed in a document. It will be a significant milestone for the project and will invite public participation to comment on the project. He says they look forward to engaging more formally with the community and really helping design the project in a way most sensitive to the environment and the needs of the community. The State's Land Commission has selected Aspen Environmental Group as the consultant to spearhead the study. Originally, 2 applicants proposed wind energy projects off the coast of Vandenberg, but the State Lands Commission said the second firm withdrew its application in February. CAD Demo's project could be operational by late 2027. The proposal involves 4 turbine generators on floating platforms about the size of a football field and moored to the seafloor about 2.8 miles from the Santa Barbara County shore. Each would generate between 12 and 15 megawatts of electricity for a maximum of 60 megawatts or enough renewable electricity each year to meet the needs of the equivalent of 16,300 U.S. households. The towers will stand 500 feet in the air, with the blade tips extending up to 870 feet. Electricity would be brought ashore at Vandenberg and eventually connect to an existing substation near Surf Beach. Power purchase agreements are pending, but Pacific Gas and Electric Company and Vandenberg could be key customers. The CAD Demo project would occur in state waters, unlike larger proposals that are planned for federal waters off the coast of Morro Bay and Humboldt. Offshore wind energy doesn't occur yet on the West Coast, but projects do exist on the East Coast and in Europe and Asia. The state of California has reached another milestone on a journey towards climate resilience by releasing new targets for scaling nature-based climate solutions across California's diverse agricultural and natural lands. California farmers and ranchers face growing climate-exacerbated threats from floods, wildfires, droughts, and pests, as well as threats from sprawling development. The targets released aim to protect the food supply by shoring up agriculture's resilience and permanently protecting productive farmland and rangeland from development threats. Healthy soils practices and organic systems, for example, improve the water holding capacity of soil to better withstand water scarcity and decrease flood damage. They can also increase pest and disease resistance by improving plant health and beneficial insect habitat and reduce the need for fossil fuel-based pesticides and fertilizers. These targets mark an important step forward in integrating the power of nature and agriculture into the state's climate mitigation and resilience strategy, according to Brian Shobe, policy director of the California Climate and Agriculture Network, otherwise known as CalCAN. He says it's critical to have ambitious statewide goals and plans and the resources to implement them to unleash climate solutions across California's 100 million acres of natural and working lands. For many years, the state of California has had climate change-related targets for almost every sector of the economy except the land sector, which includes agricultural lands, forests, wetlands, deserts, and etc. Targets are used to guide and justify state policies and investments, as well as measure progress. Achieving them, however, will require greater investments in research, technical assistance, regulatory efficiency, workforce development, infrastructure, and incentives to give farmers, ranchers, and other land stewards the tools they need to scale nature-based climate strategies. The governor and legislature can take immediate action towards making progress on the targets by passing a climate bond measure with at least $1 billion for food and farm resilience investments, as called for by the Food and Farm Resilience Coalition and its 130-plus supporting organizations. This proposal includes investments that are explicitly connected to achieving the targets, such as $100 million for the Healthy Soils Program, $150 million for farmland conservation and land access, and $30 million for organic transition. In the face of the state's budget deficit, a climate bond that accelerates agricultural climate solutions is vital for continuing to make investments in tackling the climate crisis. Colby Pieria, Chief Operating Officer of Braga Fresh, has received the Grower Shipper Foundation Ag Woman of the Year Award. The Agricultural Woman of the Year Award honors unique leadership qualities held by women working within the agricultural industry in Monterey, Santa Cruz, and San Benito counties. The award winner demonstrates a significant contribution to agriculture, is a leader in the community, and is an advocate for agriculture, according to the organization. Ag Against Hunger, a program of the Grower Shipper Foundation, honored Pieria at its annual Agricultural Woman of the Year recognition luncheon. Pieria has a rich background in family farming and is active in several professional and community organizations, including the Salinas Valley Chapter of California Women for Agriculture, the Monterey County Farm Bureau, and the Grower Shipper Association of Central California. Progressive Produce has promoted Dr. Oscar Guzman to Vice President of Marketing and Sales. Dr. Guzman, who joined Progressive Produce in 2017 as a sales manager, has continuously demonstrated leadership and innovation in elevating Progressive's marketing and sales strategies. Since joining a Progressive Produce family, Dr. Guzman has spearheaded numerous initiatives that have propelled the company's marketing and sales efforts. His approach has led to the redesign of existing brands, the establishment of a robust online presence across various social media platforms, and the development of value-added programs with key customers. In recognition of his contributions, Dr. Guzman was appointed Director of Marketing in 2019, where he continued to drive marketing strategies and initiatives. One of his achievements has been the formation of a dynamic and talented marketing team, which has played a pivotal role in the execution of innovative campaigns and initiatives. Additionally, he has assumed significant sales and management responsibilities, further solidifying this role within the organization. In his new role, Dr. Guzman will continue to drive forward Progressive Produce's mission of delivering quality and value to customers while spearheading marketing and sales initiatives.
Early registration for the 2024 Crop Consultant Conference, hosted by Progressive Crop Consultant Magazine and Western Region Certified Crop Advisors, is now open. The popular event for certified crop advisors, pest control advisors, grower applicators, and industry professionals is the mainstay for all continuing education needs this year and will take place on September 25th and 26th at the Visalia Convention Center. Visit myaglife.com/events for the early discounted rate of $275 per person, which includes the live conference, a trade show with 70-plus exhibits, first-class dining, entertainment, and a mixer. We'll see you there. There are multiple sap-sucking pests that California citrus growers have to deal with every season, whether that's mealybugs, scales, or even Asian citrus psyllid. Protecting these insects and allowing them to flourish in citrus groves is usually the Argentine ant, which feeds off sugars produced from these citrus pests and has become the focus of research for the California citrus industry by Citrus Research Board and UC Riverside, among other entities. Without the ants, hoverflies, which are parasitoids of Asian citrus psyllid, are able to flourish, adding a biological aspect to an integrated pest management program.
Anything that produces a sugar in the process is attracting these ants, because they're the liquid sugar feeding ants, and they will come to that food source and eventually they will try and protect the food source from anything that try to interfere with that. And along the process, since we are deploying the biological control options for ACP, mealybugs, and scales, it will chase away or completely destroy these natural enemies, the good guys, and it will reduce the efficacy of our biocontrol agents that we're trying to implement. So it's really an IPM issue, and it's something that needs to be addressed if our IPM programs for these other pests is to be effective. We have Tamarixia, which is a wasp, the parasitoid that you mentioned. Actually, it has been it is being released in urban areas. So the problem with these ants is that they are pretty ubiquitous in both the urban and commercial settings. So if we go to urban settings, Tamarixia is being released by the state in urban areas to control the ACP. And these guys, the Argentine ants, they're simply present in millions on a single tree, and they will eliminate all of those wasps that are pretty expensive to rear and release by the state, and they're eliminating the parasitism rate by almost 50% whenever they are present on trees. And with commercial citrus, where we have the predators, the big guys that are consuming the nymphs and they're consuming the mealybugs and scales, it will simply chase them away because they will outnumber them, outnumber the native ants that we have. They are not just an issue for IPM, they're an issue for sustainability and for, let's say, from the ecological perspective, they will eliminate our native ants that we have here just to get to that food source and protect it. So they're really the bottom line with these ants, the Argentine ants, and this is why they are so much effective. They're invasive, but they form a super colony. So they can have multiple nests, multiple queens living with each other below a single tree. And simply not like other ants, they will not compete for a food source, but they will stay together and outcompete the other ants and other predators that we are trying to do with our IPM program. So they're really like outnumbering anything that tries to interfere with their food. And this is why they have been so successful, because they're like in high numbers and many nests collaborating with each other, I guess, sort of speaking.
Ivan Milosavljevic with Citrus Research Board, who has been a part of research looking at a novel method for control of the Argentine ant for some years now, provided some updates on the method and its viability for My Ag Life at last month's California Citrus Showcase in Visalia. The method uses hydrogel beads containing a trace amount of pesticide, which the sugar-feeding Argentine ant will take back to the colony and feed on. The beads, which are biodegradable, would be more readily available to growers and cheaper than ant bait stations.
Now, there are two different types. One is organically made from food grade materials, the seaweed gels, sort of speaking, from sodium alginate and calcium chloride that you actually mix together. And you basically soak them in a tub with a sucrose solution and a pesticide, and they absorb that, and they will expand and act as a miniature bait stations that you can deploy below the trees. And that attracts the ants. The ants will come to that food source, and eventually, because they feed mouth by mouth, they feed their nest mates, they go below ground where the queens are present, and we can't control the queens. And that was the issue with Lori's band. It will not control the queens that are below the trees. This method, they are taking the food back to the queens, feed them mouth by mouth, and eventually when the queens get poisoned and die, the colony collapses. So this is one type of gels. The other type of gels is the polyacrylamide gels that some other people are working on and that I will be working on moving forward. They are not organically made, but they're commercially available. And they can be used for conventional, not organic, but conventional if they get approved, of course. This is the same methodology, but instead you're using these beads that you can purchase, basically crystals that you can purchase online and infuse them with whatever chemical you want to do. In our efficacy data that we have and we have collected, thymotoxin was very effective at low rates, as well as spinosad at a little bit of a higher rate, 0.01%, but this is way below the label rate for this spinosad. And it's pretty effective, and what we are trying to do is to move forward with this gel technology as much as we can. As an industry, as a researcher, I would really like to see that going, and I think we are moving in right direction altogether and trying to register something for the growers in a long run, or maybe as short as possible, and have an option for growers to use in their fields.
You're listening to My Ag Life. I'm Taylor Charlstrom. By partnering with JCS Marketing Incorporated, your company can achieve 3.5 million impressions to growers, consultants, and industry professionals annually. Our comprehensive media suite, which includes prestigious publications as well as dynamic websites, targeted emails, engaging podcasts, and premier trade shows, provides a strategic platform for targeting key decision makers. This approach can amplify your company's visibility to a specific audience and fosters meaningful connections, positioning your brand at the forefront of the agricultural community. Don't wait for success to come to you. Call our office today at 559-352-4456. That's 559-352-4456.
The Federal Reserve Board has released its April Beige Book last week. It summarizes current economic conditions and includes observations on the agricultural economy. In Atlanta's 6th District, agricultural conditions showed improvement in recent weeks with continued resilience in a cattle market and strong dairy demand. In the 7th District of Chicago, field work in preparation for planting was well ahead of the usual pace given warmer than normal temperatures. In the 8th District of St. Louis, total acres planted at the end of March were similar to last year, but there are concerns about wet weather in multiple states. In Minneapolis's 9th District, warmer weather and widespread mild drought conditions led to a mixed outlook going into planting. In the 11th District of Dallas, drought remained prevalent in West Texas and southern New Mexico. In the 12th District around San Francisco, rainfall provided much-needed water for crops but did cause some flooding. The first of several USDA-led regional food business centers is now in business and accepting grant applications to help small and mid-sized farm and food businesses grow. USDA Ag News reporter Rod Bain.
It is the first of 12 regional food business centers developed by the Agriculture Department, covering Minnesota and the Dakotas. And recently, the North Central Regional Food Business Center announced business builder grant availability to assist small and mid-sized farm and food businesses with a regional focus. Felicity Merritt is with the North Central Center.
For the applicants in our region, applications are open right now, and they are due April 30th.
Grants through the Agricultural Marketing Service support regional food business centers in expanding supply chain technical assistance and regional marketing and sales opportunities. Some awards in the North Central Center's coverage area will be given annually for the next 5 years. Similar food business centers include one national in scope for intertribal farm and food businesses. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
The National Dairy Farmers Assuring Responsible Management Program, known as the FARM Program, has released findings from its conservation practice questionnaire highlighting the leading stewardship of dairy farmers. The findings were released as FARM and the National Milk Producers Federation observed Earth Day. The questionnaire, a voluntary addition to the FARM Environmental Stewardship Program, highlights some of U.S. dairy farmers' conservation efforts, including practices and technologies that show effective water, energy, and other resource stewardship. As of this month, the questionnaire shows that 79% of dairy farmers reuse or recycle water on their farms, 90% of participating farms reporting implementing field conservation practices. Also, 68% of farmers use recycled manure, recycled sand, or byproducts as bedding for their cows. More than 97% of participating dairy farmers use energy-saving technologies and practices. To further support dairy farmers' efforts to implement conservation practices and technologies, FARM launched a searchable database of resources. President Joe Biden has proposed tripling steel and aluminum tariffs on China, but USDA Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack argues provoking China may be at the root of a rising farm trade deficit. Top Senate Finance Republican Mike Crapo brought up the steel tariff issue with U.S. Trade Representative Katherine Tai, urging she quickly finish a required tariff review and act.
It's my understanding that President Biden has recommended that there be a tripling of our tariffs on steel and aluminum for China. And the question I have is, when are we going to get an answer? When will this investigation end and a decision be made?
We are in very, very advanced stages of our interagency work, and then I expect that we will come to conclusion very soon.
But Biden's tripling of the steel tariffs started by former President Donald Trump could again spark retaliation by China against U.S. ag producers. Yet Secretary Vilsack had this possible explanation for the growing U.S. ag deficit in an exchange with top GOP Senate ag appropriator John Hoeven at a recent meeting.
Our trade deficit for the first 3 months of fiscal year 24 was $6 billion. Bought $6 billion more than we sold. China purchased $6 billion less.
Yeah, I knew that's where you were going. Yeah. Coincidence, no, right?
Well, look, if you continually wrap your number one customer, it's not surprising that your number one customer would send you a signal about, hey, we're paying attention. So what has to happen, I think, is a much more nuanced and sophisticated conversation about China.
But President Biden has left U.S. tariffs imposed by Trump in place on hundreds of billions of Chinese goods, while Beijing's kept its retaliatory tariffs on U.S. farm goods like soybeans, and it's failed to live up to its phase one commitments to the U.S. to buy more farm goods.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing team, thank you for listening.